The federal social security system, how should it be changed? That is the question. This is America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Host today is the Congress of Industrial Organizations, represented here by Paul Sifton of the United Automobile Workers. Our other guests, Representative Andrew B. Miller, Democrat of Wisconsin, Lloyd Halverson of the National Grange, and Benjamin S. Kendrick of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States. Our moderator is David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. Mr. Brinkley.
On these programs in the last few weeks, we've discussed several of the items in President Truman's long and comprehensive legislative program, the program he recommended to Congress at the start of this session. Today, we take up another one, the Social Security System, established in the middle 30s by President Roosevelt and now a more or less accepted part of our national scheme. President Truman has advocated and still does advocate that the Social Security System be expanded to cover more people, to pay more and higher benefits, and for more reasons. The money to come from higher taxes on employed people and their employers. The reaction in Congress and out has been mixed. Some think it's a wonderful idea that should be put in effect right away. Others say it's not as good as it looks and should be examined carefully before anything is done. Today, we're going to hear both sides of this argument and possibly some others from spokesmen for the Congress, labor, business, and agriculture. To start our discussion, I'm going around our roundtable and ask each of our guests for a brief statement telling us how he feels on the question, the Social Security system, how should it be changed? I'll start with Mr. Paul Sifton of the United Automobile Workers. Mr. Sifton?
Mr. Brinkley, the wage earners of this country are deeply interested and concerned in the work that the House Ways and Means Committee is doing right now, marking up a bill, H.R. 2893, extending the old age and survivors insurance coverage to an additional 20 million people, doubling the benefits, which would even then be less than the bare minimum for an American standard of living for aged people or dependents, and also to add temporary and permanent disability coverage and benefits. The CIO favors this as part of a thorough cradle-to-the-grave Social Security program. We're also very much in favor of a thoroughly national system of unemployment compensation and public employment services to equalize coverage and benefit payments, duration, eligibility, etc., throughout the United States. We're also for a genuine national health insurance program, not some sort of means test, proper oath charity health program, such as has been proposed as an alternative to that idea that President Truman has urged. In this position, we're not in favor of a static, flabby welfare state, but we want it to underpin a new dynamic economy instead of a boom and bust, chills and fever economy. We want an economy and a society freed from fear of poverty and want, where workers are too old to work and too young to die or during unemployment or disability. We want protection on an orderly, systematic, financially feasible basis. Just as industry plans for depreciation and obsolescence, accidents to plant and machinery, we say that the people in industry should protect themselves through their elected government against the same hazards, paying through and as part of the productive process, not after disaster strikes in a hit-or-miss piecemeal relief manner. We are determined to end the morally indefensible double standard by which executives, well paid by the year, are assured $25,000 pensions, while workers, paid by the hour, day, and week, get only a miserable $312 or so a year when they are too old to work and too young to die.
Thank you, Mr. Sifton. Now, Mr. Halverson of the National Grange.
Well, farmers are most interested in the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Program. And on that, the position of the National Grange for several years has been that the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Program should be extended to farmers when and if a practical means can be found to make it work. In other words, the National Grange has endorsed the idea of this type of Social Security for farmers for several years, and the only question has been that of administrative feasibility. The Treasury and Social Security officials have said that they are now confident that it is administratively feasible to extend the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Program to farmers, including farm operators as well as a hired man. We must also consider the farmer side of the question, because farmers do not want to be burdened with a lot of red tape and bookwork in complying with Social Security. Our study of the proposed method of extending Social Security to farmers has now convinced us that it would be quite feasible from a farmer's standpoint and quite easy for the farmer to fill his income, a Social Security tax return. About all a farmer would have to do for his own coverage would be to send in a few figures from his income tax statement, and for the hired man, a stamp plan has been worked out involving really no records at all.
Thank you. Now, Representative B. Miller of Wisconsin.
I'm convinced the people of this country are almost unanimous in wanting at least a doubling of benefits under old age and survivors insurance and a great increase in coverage to take in about 20 to 25 million people who are not now covered. I am further convinced that unless this Congress takes such action and takes it rather quickly, that we will be faced with a great demand for the passage of a general old age pension plan along the lines of the Townsend movement, which has been prominent in this country for many years. It is my personal belief there are many members of the Congress who would vote to bring out a Townsend bill unless immediate action is had on old age and survivors insurance. Secondly, I am proud to be one of the authors of the President's Health Program, in which we want to create means of getting more doctors, more hospitals, increased facilities for medical care in rural areas, and a system of national health insurance. I regard the latter as a logical extension of the principle of social insurance, which now covers old age, unemployment, and industrial accidents to the fourth great hazard to which the worker and others are subject, the costs of medical care. And I think if this Congress will do those two things, first, increase benefits and extend coverage under old age and survivors insurance section of the Social Security law, and second, extend the principle of social insurance to the cost of medical care, it will be doing two things that the American people need very badly.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Kendrick of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States.
Social Security, of course, means compulsory government insurance. We at the Chamber of Commerce of the United States favor Social Security. We favor this compulsory government insurance so far as it operates effectively to give everyone a basic layer of protection against the major hazards of life, dependent old age, unemployment, and the like. Above this basic layer of compulsory government protection, we believe the individual should be free, free to buy more protection or not, as he sees fit. On these principles, we favor an extension of Social Security to everyone. All should have this basic floor of protection that Social Security gives. We also favor some liberalization of benefits to take account of higher prices. But there is danger of going too far here, of encroaching on the individual's freedom to buy or not to buy such supplementary comfort-level protection as he may wish. On unemployment insurance, we favor the state systems. We believe these state systems are more closely adjusted to the wishes and needs of the people in the various states than a uniform federal system would be. We oppose proposals for socialized medicine because we favor good health in America. We believe any socialized medicine plan would not give people a real floor of protection, but on the contrary, would operate to reduce our present high standards of medical care to a uniform level of mediocrity.
I'd like to
comment
on something that Congressman B. Miller said, and that was in regard to the fact that if we don't improve Social Security, we're apt to get some kind of a old age pension plan like the Townsend plan. Now, Congressman, you didn't say why you would favor or why you think Social Security is superior to the Townsend plan, saying. I would like to bring out a point on that. We feel the same way. We feel that Social Security is in a more self-respecting way. Everybody contributes towards their old age, and they get benefit somewhat in proportion to what they have put in. And it isn't, you're getting away from the charity idea in the Social Security Old Age and Survivors Insurance Program. So I just wanted to bring that out as one of the advantages why we are for Social Security over the pension plan.
Well, Mr. Halverson, I feel much the same as you do, but I think that you recognize, and I'm sure everyone on this program agrees on this one point at least, that if we continue to have lower benefits under Social Security than we now have under old age assistance programs in the various states, that we will not be able to sell this Social Security program much longer to the people, because they are looking for increased benefits, they need them, and they're entitled to them. And that was my point, that unless that is done, then the move for a general pension system is going to gain a lot of momentum.
Yes, I agree, but I just want to bring out the reason why we are so concerned with having social insurance rather than public assistance.
At this point, before we go any further, I think it might be helpful if somebody would give us a quick explanation of just what is proposed in the bill now being considered as regards old age and survivor's insurance. What would it do? Mr. Sifton, can you do that for us? How much would it pay and how much would it cost and who would get the money?
Well, the principal provisions of the old age and survivor's insurance bill that's now being marked up by the House Ways and Means Committee call for doubling of the insurance of the benefits paid to aged persons or their survivors. It also calls for bringing in some 20 million persons not now covered, including the farmers and the hired farm hands. And by the way, the news, the Grange's attitude is great news, I may say, to the CIO and I'm sure to the AFL, that oldest farm organization is now raise itself in support of this idea of systematic compulsory coverage in this program. In addition to that, it calls also for establishing temporary and permanent disability benefits as systematic coverage. If there is a justification, and there certainly is for unemployment compensation, there is even more justification for disability benefits because it costs more to be idle and sick than it does to, just to be idle. And that is certainly long overdue.
Mr. Halverson, I believe the Grange has changed its position in the last week or so, hasn't it?
Well, we did testify for voluntary coverage under Social Security, but we've changed since then because when I went up there, I testified for the Grange for voluntary coverage. And the reason we asked for voluntary coverage at that time was that we were not sure that the method of covering farmers would be administratively feasible. As our resolution stated, we wanted coverage if and when a practical means can be found to make it work. Well, we weren't sure. Since I testified, we received the actual forms from the Social Security and Treasury people that will be used in the program in covering farm people. In other words, the forms that farmers would be required to fill out and how they would cover the hired man. And after we studied those forms, we became convinced that it's relatively simple for a farmer to fill out the Social Security tax return because it involves simply a few figures from his income tax return. And for the hired farm worker, it just involves pasting some stamps in the worker's book that would give him credit for his Social Security and that work. And we also considered the fact that if we made it voluntary, the program would have to be greatly restricted, as it would if it went into effect on a voluntary basis. Probably all the old farmers would go in because of benefits. They would be retiring in a few years, and they would get terrific benefits in proportion to what they've contributed in that short while. And because of these restrictions that would have to be involved in voluntary coverage, we have come to the conclusion that compulsory is feasible, and it would also give the farmers the best type of protection.
Mr. Kendrick?
I would like to say just a word or so on the point that was made that average payments under the old age assistance programs in the states are higher than average payments under old age and survivors insurance. We all agree, I think, that old age and survivors insurance is a better way to do the job. Thus, we at the Chamber, and I believe the others on the program, feel that benefits should be increased and that coverage should be extended to substantially all now excluded. By the same token, though, I think that when that is done, when old age and survivors insurance takes over the load, that the federal government should gradually withdraw from the public assistance field and turn the job of providing any supplementary assistance payments back over to the states, when the federal government does the major insurance job. For this reason, we've been unable to understand the logic behind the administration's proposal not only to build up the insurance program, but also to build up the assistance program in competition with the better program, which they're also advocating.
Well, we,
Mr. Sifton?
We feel on that you can't instantaneously arrive at a new system where everyone is covered under an unemployment insurance program and is actually receiving adequate benefits. And we agree that the House Ways and Means Committee was right in putting OASI consideration ahead of the public assistance. And to the degree that they make give us an adequate OASI coverage in benefits, the need for public assistance will be diminished. And Congressman Forand, in introducing his bill, stipulated that the public assistance demand would taper off as the insurance program picked up, and also, this should be emphasized, and as other necessary steps in the maintenance of a healthy, steady, full employment economy are taken by the Congress. This is not a one-shot proposition. A great many things are necessary to take the chills and fever out of our economy and to get stable health introduced into the operations of our production, distribution, and consumption so that we can buy back what we produce on a year-in and year-out basis.
Yet, as I recall, Social Security Commissioner Altmaier testified that the public assistance bill, even with the concurrent adoption of the insurance bill, would cost $250 million more a year, assuming prosperity, and he didn't even venture to hazard a guess of the additional costs should there be a business recession.
Well, there are about, at the present time, there are 400,000 units, family units, on the relief rolls, which means at least 800,000 people drawing relief, and that excludes an unknown number of thousands who are not on the rolls because the states do not have the money. I think the findings as to the need for public assistance are to be relied on, and it is substantial. We had witnesses in here describing the need that does exist in the states, and the states do not have the funds to meet the human needs of these persons who are destitute at the present time and who will be destitute the day after you have an expanded and improved OASI program.
Well, I think that there's two points ought to be made there. First, that there is a significant number of people who draw OASI benefits and also draw public assistance benefits at the moment. Obviously, if OASI payments are increased, that load goes down. Secondly, on the other types of assistance aids, in most instances, remember, there are matching funds to be raised by the states. And in most cases that I am familiar with, the states say that they cannot at this time raise sufficient funds to adequately meet questions like mother's pensions, for example, which come into the act here. And I think that that point should be noted and not forgotten in our discussion of whether federal help is needed in a public assistance program.
Well, before we go on to some of the other features in this general subject of Social Security, I'd like to hear a little about this disability insurance provision. I believe we've had some expressions of opinion on that already. Will somebody tell us, first of all, just what it is? Mr. B. Miller or Mr. Halverson, can you do that?
I was going to comment on the desirability of it. I'd rather have Mr. B. Miller explain.
What is it, Mr. B. Miller?
Disability insurance is a very simple device that takes a logical extension, I think, of the principle of unemployment compensation. At the moment, unemployment compensation is paid only to those who are laid off by an action of their employer. Disability insurance means that if you are incapacitated by sickness or by an injury occurring outside the plant, that you then can draw the same type of benefits that you draw under unemployment compensation. Those of us, like myself, who favor it will argue that the social principle is the same. That if a person is incapacitated through no fault of his own, whether it be unemployment, sickness, or accident outside the plant, that he raises exactly the same social problem, and that we should, as a social organism, recognize his claim for some protection for himself and his family during that period. So I repeat, all we're doing is taking the principle of unemployment compensation, extending it to the person who is ill or who has suffered an accident outside the plant. As I recall it, the bill provides for 0.5% tax each way, employer and employee, to meet that cost.
Mr. Kendrick, I believe the Chamber of Commerce is opposed to that idea, is it not? Would you tell us why?
Well, I think Congressman Bimala's remarks were primarily directed to the temporary sickness provisions in the bill, the weekly benefits that would be paid for about 26 weeks, analogous to unemployment benefits. Now, these unemployment benefits are paid by state systems. Insofar as there should be a Social Security expansion into this very analogous sickness insurance field, it should also be state systems. So far, 5 states have already enacted such laws. A number of other states had such bills up for consideration at their sessions of their legislatures this spring. There's every reason to believe that many states will pass such laws in the near future.
Mr. Kennedy, may I ask you a question right at that point? Because I think that it bears upon this very much. While you say that the United States Chamber of Commerce is opposed to temporary disability on a national scale, your state chambers of commerce are fighting it on a state scale in most instances and preventing enactment. And I think that there is a curious contradiction there in terms of what you've just been saying, intimating that you expect this to spread through state action. In my own state, for example, the State Chamber of Commerce is bitterly fighting a state disability plan.
I think what I said was that insofar as these programs should be developed, and I didn't attempt to comment on that, state programs, I think, would definitely be preferable to a federal program because a federal program would obliterate, I think, the existing five state programs and prevent, of course, any further development in this field. To us at the Chamber, it seemed like a sheer bid for power on the part of the federal Social Security officials when they put this into the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Bill, rather than proposing some developments along the lines of unemployment compensation.
I want to say that the CIO, of course, is opposed both to the crazy quilt pattern of unemployment compensation, where the benefit qualifications, duration of benefits, and so forth are wide varies from state to state, and there's a different rate of payment in state to state. It becomes a competitive factor among employers in the more and less progressive states, and we would, of course, be in favor of obliterating these, to our mind, false and wrong starts that have been made in state disability programs. The history of these state programs is not very good. The best of them is in Rhode Island. The one in New Jersey has already developed a scandal, according to testimony before the House Ways and Means Committee. These state plans are a happy hunting ground for private insurance companies, and the actual protection at a reasonable rate that will be given the workers is much less than would be done under a federal system. As to this bid for power, the workers represented by the CIO are asking that their elected federal government give a uniform coverage for disability through constitutional action by their Congress. Now, that is not a bid for power as we understand it. We're asking our government to do something for us as a people that cannot be done as effectively and as economically and thoroughly any other way.
So far as the welfare of the workers is concerned, I think history will show that they're much better off under state systems. In the 10 years or more since the Social Security Act was enacted, the federal program, the Old Age and Survivors Insurance, hasn't been liberalized at all. But these crazy quilt state systems that you mentioned started off pretty uniform, and they've all been liberalized since. Benefit durations have been increased 50 or 100%, and benefit amounts raised very substantially. Certainly, the federal program can't show any such pattern of liberalization and progress as the state unemployment compensation systems can.
Mr. Kendrick, part of this is liberalization is try and get it. Now, in Michigan, for example, there has been an increase in the amount you can get if you can get it. But, for example, in the Michigan legislature, they put in a very tricky little amendment a few years ago that provided that there had to be, instead of 7 consecutive days of unemployment, a calendar week of unemployment. And the motor companies out there quickly developed a device of having a short shutdown for material shortages due to steel shortages and so forth, run from Thursday to Thursday, and thereby escape the payment of any unemployment compensation benefits from the funds. And there's where, you get into the vicious system of merit rating that puts a premium on finding ways to shortchange persons in the receipt of their earned benefit rights.
Well, there is, Mr. Kendrick, there's one other feature I think we should cover before we go, and that's the health insurance plan. Did you want to say something quickly before we get into that? Go ahead, sorry.
Well, on health insurance, I would say that there can be no doubt about the desirability of better health for the American people. But the pattern of progress in this country that has increased the lifespan, the length of life of persons to a tremendous extent, reduced some diseases from great scourges to insignificance within a generation or so, has been very successful. I think to scrap the existing arrangements for medical care and to go to a compulsory government system that would ensure, we believe, a uniform level of mediocrity would be a very serious mistake.
I'd like to ask Congressman B. Miller if he thinks that's an accurate description of what his bill would accomplish, and also if he would to comment on the Hill and Taft bills. I'm particularly concerned about whether or not the Hill and Taft bills would require a means test, a pauper's oath, and if they wouldn't, doesn't the setup provided in those two bills amount to practically tapping the public till for whatever the doctor-controlled administrations want to take in the way of payments for treatment to the so-called indigent few in the country, ignoring all the rest?
Mr. B. Miller?
That's a mouthful, but let me try and very briefly state first my position on my own bill and then on the Hill and Taft bills. I disagree with Mr. Kendricks' interpretation as to what compulsory health insurance would mean. The only thing compulsory about national health insurance is that it is going to make the individual who is covered by Social Security also save money to meet the cost of medical care. It will not affect the practice of medicine in any way, shape, form, or manner. The only difference will be that the doctor sends his bill to the health insurance fund instead of sending it to the individual or sending it, as he does today, for hospitalization to Blue Cross in about 30 million cases in the United States, or to Blue Shield in about 20 million cases for surgical care. Now, the doctors have admitted that the cost of hospitalization and surgical care cannot be met today through the old hit-and-miss method of collecting when you can catch the person to collect from him. And I think it would be a delightful novelty to a great many doctors to find their bills were being paid through a system of compulsory health insurance. And as for this third-person argument that you hear so much about, I want to know what the difference is between sending the bill to Blue Cross or Blue Shield, as the doctors now do in many instances, or sending it to a government health insurance fund. A third person enters for just one instance in both cases. The third person pays the bill out of funds that he's collected from the patient on a prepaid system. So far as the Taft bill is concerned, that is out-and-out socialized medicine. Like the Chamber of Commerce, I oppose socialized medicine. But I am amazed that they have smiled benignly on the Taft bill and on the Hill bills, which will simply tap the public treasury to pay the costs of what Senator Taft calls the medically indigent, which he says is 20% of the people. Now, if you're going to have a means test for 20% of the people, that is really going to be something that is going to turn this country upside down, and I'm opposed to using funds out of the public treasury for the medical needs of 20% of our people.
Mr. Kendrick?
Well, I can't rebut all of those remarks in the moment or so left, but let me just say it's not nearly so simple as Congressman B. Miller says. His own bill is 163 pages long.
That includes half of it for six other titles.
And it empowers the officials to issue regulations, which in Britain ran to about 1,300 pages under their similar scheme.
Mr. Kendrick, I wish I could give you more time. I'm sorry, I just don't have it. Before we go, I want to summarize very briefly the answers to today's question. Social Security, how should it be changed? Mr. Sifton of the CIO says the working people are interested in the bill now being considered. He says doubled benefits would still be too low. The CIO also favors unemployment compensation and a health insurance plan. Mr. Halverson says the farmers now want old age and survivors insurance extended to them since he thinks it now feasibly can be done. Representative B. Miller of Wisconsin says people want at least a doubling of the benefits and more coverage. He says that's one way to avoid a general old age pension plan, also wants health insurance. And Mr. Kendrick of the Chamber of Commerce says Social Security obviously means compulsory government insurance, but he favors it up to a point, however believes individuals should be free to buy more protection if they want it. He does not favor national health insurance. Now here's Holly Wright.
This has been America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Printed copies of today's forum may be had without cost by writing to the CIO, Washington 6, D.C. Speaking today were Paul Sifton, for our host, the Congress of Industrial Organizations, Representative Andrew B. Miller, Benjamin Kendrick of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, and Lloyd Halverson of the National Grange. Our moderator was David Brinkley.